Yesterday was my favorite holiday, something I've shared on here before, and for a host of reasons, ranging from family to trapping to football to great childhood memories. When you take into consideration the time of year, what the holiday recognizes, and the many great things that are a part of the celebration, I just can't think that you could come up with a better holiday. And this year you couple a late Thanksgiving date with the opening of winter moose season next week, and you've practically got an ongoing party that bridges one week with the next. There is a connection there, by the way, that connection being the putting of food on the table. For the particular group of Puritan colonists we like to call the Pilgrims, it was a wide array of things to include venison, fish, lobsters, clams, and several bird species, including turkeys. For the majority of folks around the Bristol Bay Area, Thanksgiving dinner probably featured turkey, the foremost Thanksgiving food for us, as the centerpiece of their meal. And come next week, and through at least the end of the month, there will be many people out and about trying to lay in a supply of fresh moose meat to the freezer, which will provide innumerable meals to be thankful for. I hope to be one of those people. Today, let's take a moment to consider some things tied to our recently celebrated holiday. Welcome to Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Terry Fuller, Education Specialist for Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. A lot of us probably trace the beginnings of our knowledge about Thanksgiving back to our elementary school days, when it was still actually cool to cut out and color turkeys in the shape of our hands. Through those early single-digit years, we likely learned all or some of the fact that the United States largely traces its own history of the holiday back to a particular harvest celebration held by a battered but thankful group of colonists that we popularly call the Pilgrims, and the Native American tribe that contributed greatly to why those Pilgrims were even still around to be thankful. That initial harvest festival, the first Thanksgiving, was held sometime during the fall of 1621, though the exact month and date are not known. The Pilgrims, after traveling across the Atlantic Ocean, suffered the unfortunate fate of being exceedingly ill-prepared, far too late in the year, in a place where they really weren't even supposed to be during the previous year. They arrived on the shores of Massachusetts late in 1620, and were not adequately equipped to survive any kind of winter at all, let alone a New England winter. Only 51 out of the 102 Pilgrims survived that first winter. Mercy and generosity on the part of the Wampanoag tribe allowed the survivors to carve out a life the following spring and summer, which led to the aforementioned harvest celebration, an event that lasted for 3 days and included all of the Pilgrims and 90 members of the tribe. After that first harvest festival, Thanksgiving was observed sporadically during colonial times and even into the early days of our country. Presidents Washington and Adams proclaimed national days of Thanksgiving in the month of December. Various states also observed Thanksgiving through our country's early years. It did not take on a permanent place on the national calendar until halfway through the American Civil War. In response to an editorial column in a newspaper, President Abraham Lincoln proclaimed a national Thanksgiving Day in 1863, to happen on the final Thursday of November. While there have been a few revisions and tweaks through the years, it has largely occupied that spot on our calendars ever since. So that's something of a synopsis for how this week's holiday came about, and no doubt much of that is stuff that you remember from your elementary school days. A couple of other things I thought I'd touch on today is just what food was present at that first celebration and how they might have acquired it to begin with, in comparison to our own Thanksgivings now and how we get the food that we put on our tables. Also, for what it's worth, what we know about that first Thanksgiving, well, since cell phones and selfies were still a long way from happening, comes from primarily two sources. Those sources both being written accounts from two of the people who were in attendance, Edward Winslow, one of the leaders of the Plymouth colony, and William Bradford, the governor of the colony at the time. A lot of what we know about the Pilgrims as a whole came from Bradford, who spent many years writing a 2-volume journal called Of Plymouth Plantation, about life in the colonies. That first festival meal spread across those 3 days was a meal I could have went for. It was very heavy on meats and breads, with fruits and vegetables virtually non-existent. The turkeys that are such a staple of modern Thanksgivings were a part of that first Thanksgiving, but certainly did not have the prominence that they do today. They were simply one of many food types. Venison and many forms of seafood were served in abundance, as well as several items made from corn. I mentioned Edward Winslow a moment ago. Here's what he had to say in a letter he wrote in 1621 to a friend back in England. "Our harvest being gotten in, our governor sent 4 men on fowling, that so we might after a special manner rejoice together after we had gathered the fruits of our labors. They 4 in one day killed as much fowl as, with a little help besides, served the company almost a week, at which time, amongst other recreations, we exercised our arms, many of the Indians coming amongst us, and among the rest, their greatest king, Massasoit, with some 90 men, whom for 3 days we entertained and feasted. And they went out and killed 5 deer, which they brought to the plantation, and bestowed on our governor, and upon the captain and others." So, based on Winslow's account, deer and birds of some type, and plenty of both, for sure made the menu. Again, in my opinion, a great start to a terrific meal. William Bradford had this to say about some of the food at that celebration. "And besides waterfowl, there was great store of wild turkeys, of which they took many besides venison." So, we've got deer, turkeys, waterfowl, likely a combination of ducks and geese, and corn. Surely there was more, right? Well, anything else that was a part of that meal is largely a matter of educated speculation, because there is no written record beyond what I've just shared. Due to population densities and other histories in the area of preferred food sources, it's believed that swans and passenger pigeons, now extinct, were other birds that were eaten. About passenger pigeon populations back then, one person wrote, "They say a man could shoot at the birds in flight and bring down 200. It's possible the turkeys and other birds were stuffed, as that was something that was done back then. Items used for stuffing included onions, herbs, corn, and chestnuts. The birds were likely roasted one day, and the remains of them thrown in a pot the next and boiled to make broth. That broth was then thickened with grain to make a sort of stew." I mentioned that the list of non-meat items was fairly limited, certainly much more so than our meals today. Nuts of various sorts, such as chestnuts, walnuts, and beechnuts, were gathered and likely an item. Flint corn, that multicolored corn that is today largely a decorative item. Beans, pumpkins, and squashes were all common foods grown and used by the Wampanoags, so those foods were likely used as well. Some later sources list other garden items, such as turnips, carrots, and garlic, though those foods likely were grown after that first Thanksgiving. Pies were common, but meat pies, not the types of pies we bake today. And there were no potatoes at that meal. Potatoes as we know them, whether white potatoes or sweet potatoes, had yet to be introduced to North America. And how did they go about procuring all those animals to use for food? Elementary school history of the Pilgrims often shows them using a firearm called a blunderbuss. You remember blunderbusses, right? Those black powder rifles and pistols that had the funky, flared-out muzzle that made them look like some kind of musical horn? In truth, the muzzle wasn't all that flared. Also, it's quite probable the Pilgrims didn't actually have any of these particular weapons. Blunderbusses weren't all that common at the time, and they were more expensive than other firearms. The Wampanoags we know about, they hunted primarily with bows and arrows. Bows were traditionally made out of maple, ash, or hickory. The arrows were made out of dogwood, with tips of flint, bone, and quartz. Later, when trading commenced, tips were fashioned out of metal. Most of the Pilgrims' personal weapons would have been either matchlock muskets or guns called fowling pieces. Matchlocks were cheaper to produce than wheel locks and flint locks, which were more reliable guns of the time. The muskets they used would have had smooth bores, meaning accuracy was probably iffy at best. Outside of maybe 50 yards, they would have been difficult to hit anything with. Also, they were large, heavy, and unwieldy. Fowling pieces were early versions of the shotgun and had thinner barrels, so they were cheaper to produce and more commonly used. I sincerely hope everyone had a delightful Thanksgiving, filled with the kind of foods that we like to eat and associate with this holiday. And for those who will be trying to get a moose starting next week, I wish you the very best, and hope that your freezer will soon be filled with delicious moose steaks, roast, and burger. While you're out there hunting, be glad you get to carry a modern rifle to hunt moose with, knowing that it will make the job just a little bit easier than the Pilgrims had all those many years ago. For Field Notes, I'm Terry Fuller. Music from Loon Echo Lake, provided courtesy of Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.